puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Still dusting himself off from the Thresherman's reunion last weekend, Gordon Goldsborough stops in for the August-long weekend edition of Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
How was it? Out there.
Oh, it was wonderful, as always. You know, it's a really great event, and I would encourage anybody to check it out.
Even if you've never done it before.
Especially if you've never done it before.
Especially. What are we talking about this week?
We're going to talk about ham, but not meat. Our topic is an abandoned ham shack and the man who operated it, one George C. Behrens.
Yeah, I'm going to put this can of pineapple away then. Ham. Okay. George Christian Behrens. Okay. Let's talk about this ham shack first. What's a ham shack?
Well, before I answer that question, I have to give a big shout out to Bruce Johnson. He brought the story to my attention. He told me about George Behrens. He arranged for a tour and he answered, well, quite a lot of my naive questions. A ham shack is a building that houses equipment to send and receive audio messages over vast distances using shortwave radio. This is sometimes known as ham radio, and it has nothing to do with meat.
Okay, then why do they call it ham?
Well, this is what I asked Bruce, and he told me that it was a term used in the early days of radio by professional operators to disparage the skills of amateur operators, saying they were ham-fisted. But, you know, as sometimes happens, those amateurs turned an insult into a badge of honor. So now they all call themselves ham operators. It's believed that the very first amateur radio operator here in Manitoba was a high school student in Winnipeg named Alexander Polson.
Hmm.
In 1909, after touring a radio installation in the eastern U.S., he and some classmates rigged up a working radio set in his home in the North End, and he transmitted a message to a friend living several miles away.
Very interesting. So this was what we're talking about, like telegraph or Morse code or what?
No,
kind of...
Basically, there'd be a radio at each end,
right.
There'd be a tower at each end, and they would send a certain frequency of, and it would go from the broadcast tower to the receiving tower.
Right.
And basically, it turns it into sound, and like you could literally talk to somebody far away.
So who's George Behrens?
Well, he's one of the best-known ham radio operators in Manitoba, and maybe even all of Canada. He was born in Denmark in 1902, and that's where his involvement with shortwave radio began. He came to Canada in the early 1920s, and I suppose it was natural that when he got married in 1935 and he settled into a comfortable house in St. James, he installed radio equipment in his backyard. And that included, of course, a tall broadcast antenna. And he began talking with other hams around the world. And he engaged in an aspect of the hobby that really does fascinate me. He exchanged QSL cards with people with whom he spoke.
I'll ask you about QSL cards in a minute, but you just brought back a memory of there being antenna towers in residential yards. I saw a lot of them growing up in different neighborhoods. Now you see one or two that may remain, but these were all amateur radio operators from their home.
That's right. And, you know, Bruce tells me that it's still a fairly popular hobby. There are some 2,000 hams in Manitoba, although he admits they're not all active. But, yeah, I mean, even today, there are quite a few of these around the, you know, around the province.
Big antenna radio towers.
That's right.
Okay, so what are QSL cards?
Well, I think of them as something like a postcard. You know, I realize a postcard is something that may be foreign to our younger listeners. But of course, at one time, if you wanted to send a short note to someone elsewhere in the world, well, you took a postcard, you know, a stiff piece of paper, you know, may have had an image on one side, and then you put the name and address of the person to which you were sending it on the other. Well, a QSL card is just a slight modification of the basic format. It specialized for ham radio operators. You know, so it had details such as the date and time when they spoke, and the person's unique call letters, which in the case of George Behrens were VE4RO. Every ham had a unique identifier. A QSL card is basically a formal acknowledgement from a radio operator with whom you have spoken that you did indeed speak. The more QSL cards one acquires, the more prestigious your reputation as a radio operator, especially if those cards are from faraway places.
So a QSL card is a confirmation that you reached someone.
That's exactly right.
So did George Behrens must have had a lot of them then?
Oh, he did. Now, a large collection of his cards survives at the Manitoba Amateur Radio Museum. And last week, I flipped through the collection to get just a general sense of the places where Behrens' radio was reaching. One card from 1937 was sent to him by an operator in Leningrad in the Soviet Union. Now, I find this fascinating because, as we know, the USSR was known for its restrictive policies towards its citizens.
Right.
To think that a Soviet ham operator was speaking with someone in Canada, well, suggests there was a means for information to flow through the Iron Curtain. And as Behrens' QSL's cards came from a lot of other places around the globe too, places like South Africa, Norway, Hawaii, Australia. Well, you know, today we take for granted the ability to talk with whomever we want, whenever we want, wherever we want. You know, but in the 1920s, when Behrens set up his ham equipment in St. James, this was definitely not the case.
Yeah, it must have been super exciting at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So how long did he operate his ham radio equipment there in St. James?
Well, Bruce Johnson says that Behrens probably became quite unpopular with his neighbors because as they began to buy radio sets through the 1920s to listen to public broadcasts from places like the CBC and other radio stations, well, the power of Behrens' equipment probably interfered with their reception.
Yeah, AM radio, you're hearing a lot of hum and static and stuff.
I think they weren't quite so fixated on specific frequencies back then. They might broadcast their signal over a wide range and it might wipe out the signal coming from the radio station. And so you go to tune into your favorite broadcast and all you hear is static.
Yeah.
Because of the ham operator next door. Now, I say that wouldn't make you very popular. And I think this might have motivated the Behrens family to move. In 1956, they went to a relatively undeveloped area northeast of Winnipeg, the area we call today Bird's Hill. There, George installed two 70-foot towers on what was called Pine Ridge, and I guess that put his towers up high enough that then he could broadcast even farther. And I'm told that he broadcast at a strength of 750 watts, which is the maximum permitted by law. So the idea was that he could go as far as he possibly could with his signal. And he must have loved his new digs. You know, he built a ham shack to house his radio equipment, and he began fastening QSL cards all over the interior walls and ceiling, well, until literally every square inch was covered. Unfortunately, his use of the ham shack, well, it really only lasted 8 years.
Obviously, I'm going to ask you why that is.
Well, it's unfortunately because the land he purchased, you know, where he built his home for his family, where he built his ham shack, it was situated in an area that in 1964 was expropriated by the Manitoba government. Why? Well, they were planning to develop Bird's Hill Provincial Park.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, some 155 property owners, including the Behrenses, they were given just a few months' notice to get out. Well, I can imagine just, you know, George Behrens must have been disheartened, but he was not defeated. He purchased another property a couple of miles away outside of the expropriated area, and he began building another home, and in fact, nearly identical to the one that had been expropriated, and he moved his radio and his towers there. But unfortunately, it seems likely that he never got to use his ham shack at the new site.
Oh no, why?
Well, before his new home was even finished, George Behrens was diagnosed with cancer, and he died in 1965 at the age of just 63.
Oh.
But thanks to Bruce Johnson, I had an opportunity a few weeks ago to visit his former home in Bird's Hill Park, along with George's daughter, Joy. The house is still used as a residence for government staff. I had worried maybe they had torn it down as part of the development of the park, but no, it's still standing, still looks in great shape. And we also visited his final home nearby, the one that he started building but couldn't finish. We actually met the resident there, Kelly, who was very accommodating and allowed Bruce, Joy, and me to see the old ham shack in her backyard. Now, we did have to be careful in walking to the ham shack because the entire area surrounding the little building was, oh, man, there was piles of poison ivy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Watch out.
And luckily, I don't think I got it because I've since never been scratching, so Hopefully it worked out okay. But, you know, time has not been kind to the little ham shack. There are huge holes in its roof that have caused the ceiling to collapse. And I guess at one time, George Behrens had put wood chips above the ceiling to use as some sort of insulation. Well, that's spewed the wood chips everywhere, all the tables and things. What's interesting is some of his radio equipment is still inside. But what was more exciting for me, there were still numerous QSL cards stapled to the walls and the ceiling.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
still.
We looked a few, took a few of them down and looked. Yeah, there was ones from the USSR, ones from Sweden, like literally from all over the world.
Was that the first time Joy had been there in a while?
Oh, yeah. I think since perhaps the family had moved away. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and it must have been really quite emotional
exciting,
for her.
Yeah.
You know, to see her old home and to see her dad's ham shack, you know, not looking great, unfortunately, but still there at least.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But we had one more treat in store because before we returned home, we had a short visit to another reminder in Birds Hill Park of George Behrens' short-lived residence there. One of the things he did after he moved to Birds Hill from St. James, he established Manitoba's first licensed, privately owned tree farms. He called it Pine Ridge Forest Nursery, and he planted over 60,000 small trees. And I think the idea was he was going to turn this into a source of post-retirement income. Well, unfortunately, only a few of those trees were harvested before the Behrens' property was expropriated. But today, nearly 70 years later, those trees are fully mature. You know, and in fact, some of the trails through the park, you know, when you walk around those trails, they wind their way through the former tree nursery. And so I would encourage our listeners to check it out. And as you're walking along those trails, think of George Behrens and his ham radio legacy, you know, as you walk under the shade of his magnificent trees.
I would never have thought, I didn't know that part of Birds Hill history. I would have just thought that was natural forest happening there.
Well, in fact, the way you can tell that it's a plantation is if you look from above, like from a satellite image or a drone or something, the trees are in rows.
Right.
And of course, trees don't normally grow that way naturally.
No.
They were planted there by George Behrens almost 70 years ago. And so, say, now they're huge trees.
Wow, that's a second part of that story. That's, you know, his contribution to Birds Hill Park,
mm-hmm.
a home and a forest that mm-hmm. They could build trails. That's excellent. Very interesting, Gordon. So thanks for that. What's up for next week?
Well, you mentioned two aspects of the story. Well, we're going to stick with George Behrens next week. The story's not complete because there's an entirely different dimension to his life for which I think he should be remembered. And it relates to copper. And I'll say more next week.
Excellent. Can't wait for that. We'll see you next week, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.